By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Emerging Markets Decoded, the podcast that tackles the latest trends shaping the world of emerging markets. I'm your host for today, Thaddeus Best from Moody's Global Emerging Markets team, coming to you from London. Now, cryptocurrencies have exploded in popularity over the last decade, with the global cryptocurrency market cap reaching $1.7 trillion, larger than that of the Brazilian stock exchange. The rise in digital assets, which includes cryptocurrencies and stablecoins, has increased pressure on central banks to offer an officially backed digital solution. And in recent years, central banks have started to explore the possibility of introducing their own forms of electronic money, known as central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, with potentially profound consequences for the future structure of the banking systems that they oversee. In our first segment, we'll be joined by Olivier Chimba from our sovereign team in Frankfurt to discuss the opportunities and risks that CBDCs pose to emerging market sovereigns. And in the second segment, staying on the topic of digital assets, we'll be joined by my colleague Jaime Ruiz, also from the sovereign team, but based in New York, to discuss El Salvador, which is planning to launch its first Bitcoin bond in the coming days. The Central American country made waves last year after becoming the first government in the world to adopt Bitcoin as a legal currency. The stakes are high for this unconventional issuance, given the government is facing liquidity challenges and currently lacks an IMF program, meaning that its disappointing outcome for the issuance could leave El Salvador short of refinancing options ahead of its bond maturing in 2023. But first, let's start with CBDCs. Olivier, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Thaddeus. Thanks for having me.
Now, Olivier, before we drill down into central bank digital currencies, can you briefly outline for our listeners what the defining characteristics are and how they differ from many of the other digital assets that are floating about at the moment, like Bitcoin?
Sure. There is a big hype currently with cryptocurrencies, stable coins, but I think it's important to remember that these digital assets do not fulfill the three main characteristics of a currency, which are a unit of account, medium of exchange, and a store of value. And so the CBDC project, in a way, is designed to bridge the gap between new technologies and traditional fiat currencies.
And for emerging markets specifically, you know, one of the main challenges for central banks is financial inclusion, and particularly in countries with relatively low income levels and or parts of their populations living in remote areas, getting access to traditional brick and mortar banking services can be challenging. And financial inclusion has historically been quite low in countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America and the Caribbean, and the Middle East and North Africa. Can CBDCs help with this challenge? And if so, what advantage do they have compared to some of the alternative payment systems that have already sprung up, like M-Pesa in some sub-Saharan African countries?
That's a very important point. There are 1.7 billion people that are unbanked, and many of those live in emerging market economies. And so, of course, financial inclusion and the cost of financial transactions are extremely important, both from a domestic perspective, but also when we think about cross-border payments, typically remittances. And so the main difference between a CBDC and existing digital payment solutions are that the CBDC will provide direct access to central bank money, whereas M-Pesa, for instance, or other digital payment solutions are a liability of the financial institution. And so, of course, the CBDC would bring directly digital money to people, for instance, via smartphones.
And some of the research on CBDCs in advanced economies has highlighted possible advantages in terms of, you know, for example, monetary policy transmission for central banks. Do you think this is likely to be the case also for emerging markets that are going to be potentially pioneering CBDCs as well?
That's the credibility question. And of course, we do not expect credibility to be changed by the miracle of a CBDC, meaning that a country with a weak currency or unstable currency is unlikely to see its currency stabilized because of a CBDC. Now, of course, there are some advantages, as you mentioned, and one would be to improve the monetary policy pass-through and also to implement more directly fiscal policy, because the CBDC would allow the government and the authorities to directly target individuals.
The bottom line here is ultimately that CBDCs alone don't fundamentally change the credibility issues that some emerging market central banks may face. And I guess in that vein, what are the key factors that are ultimately going to determine how successful the implementation and adoption of CBDCs in emerging markets are likely to be?
I think there are four conditions for success, if I may say. The first one is infrastructure. How good the infrastructure will be. Of course, it's already a very pressing issue, but with a CBDC, especially if it's a retail CBDC where millions of people have access via digital wallets to this central bank digital currency, the infrastructure, of course, is paramount. The second question and related condition is cybersecurity. With cyber attacks increasing on government websites and, let's say, government institutions, of course, CBDCs could be the aim of cyber attacks. The third condition for success is the balance between privacy and accountability. I think one of the defining advantages of fiat currency is anonymity. At the same time, you do have this challenge for policymakers to trace financial transactions. Last but not least, the fourth condition is certainly the institutional setup. And here you have the traditional, I would say, debate about how does the government and the central bank interact, and namely, how independent is the central bank to carry out its operations. So many things to be discussed in the coming years.
Olivia, thank you for sharing your insights with us here today. Now let's turn to Jaime Roish from our Sovereign team in New York to talk about the forthcoming Bitcoin bomb from El Salvador. Jaime, welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Thaddeus.
We've just been talking to Olivia about how central banks are starting to evaluate the possibility of developing and using their own digital currencies. However, El Salvador's approach has been quite different in that respect, insofar as they actually passed legislation last year to allow Bitcoin, which is, you know, essentially a private digital currency, to be used as legal tender. So before we get into this planned Bitcoin bond issuance, could you tell us a bit more about how we looked at this fairly unorthodox development to essentially adopt Bitcoin as a legal tender?
Unorthodox is a really good description of what this was, because you typically expect sovereigns to adopt fiat currencies as their main medium of exchange. And here, El Salvador decided to adopt a crypto asset, which is Bitcoin, because it's more of an asset than it is a currency, given the fact that it varies in price so much, and the volatility in price creates a lot of concerns about financial stability, about how reliable this can be as a fiat medium of exchange. And so they might have been better served with, forget about a CBDC, maybe even a stable coin, which is a different type of cryptocurrency that usually has a stable value relative to the US dollar. And they haven't been strangers to adopting currencies that aren't their own, because this is an economy that's dollarized. It uses the dollar as its official currency since 2001. And so, you know, putting Bitcoin on par with the US dollar as medium of exchange certainly raises a lot of concerns about the viability of this, about financial inclusion, about transparency, and a lot of other issues that could relate to, for example, illicit activities.
So turning to the Bitcoin bond, you know, this is, I believe, the first sovereign issuance of its kind. Can you tell us a bit more about the structure of this bond, and then also what the government is planning to do with the funds that it raises?
Sure. The Bitcoin bond, the name is quite clever because there's a bit of marketing to it. The bond itself is going to be denominated in US dollars. And the idea is that people, retail investors rather, can invest in the bond by buying it via a blockchain or an app on your phone. in increments of $100. And they plan to raise $1 billion with this bond issuance, which, as you said, is going to be the first of its kind. And the funds, they plan to use half of those funds to build a Bitcoin city, a city that's going to be pretty much themed around Bitcoin, where there's going to be a lot of investment and mining in Bitcoin. And they hope to attract a lot of foreign investors to come in and to make mining operations. And then the other half of the bond proceeds, the other $500 million, they're expecting to buy Bitcoin with that, lock it away for 5 years, and then after 5 years, start selling that Bitcoin at a profit, assuming, of course, that the price of Bitcoin goes up over those 5 years, and then sharing those profits with the investors.
And why has the government opted to go down this route versus, you know, more conventional financing sources?
They've had a lot of liquidity struggles in the past. As a dollarized economy, they have very limited financing options, and they became very reliant on capital markets. But the thing was that they started issuing a lot of external market debt at very high rates, at very high coupons, at high yields. And as you accumulate more of this debt, it becomes very hard to service it because it becomes very costly. So with that, the yields on their existing market bonds have shot up significantly because there is very little confidence in the government's ability to maintain coherent fiscal policy. And the fact that, of course, they've adopted Bitcoin as legal tender, which wasn't to the International Monetary Fund's liking. They were negotiating a program with the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and that was completely derailed when they adopted Bitcoin. And the IMF, of course, gives you cheap long-term financing with, of course, an adjustment program, which they didn't want to undertake. So the reason why they've gone into this is that they're looking for a silver bullet that will reinvigorate economic activity, provide financing to the government, and create a novel new industry for new economic investment. And so that's the idea behind the Bitcoin city, adopting Bitcoin as legal tender, and of course, this Bitcoin bond.
What kind of additional risks does El Salvador face with this issuance? For example, the volatility in Bitcoin's price action is generally magnitudes greater than the typical movements that we see in reserve currency pairs like the dollar or euro. Presumably, El Salvador is carrying quite a lot of market risk here.
Absolutely. They're taking the exchange risk on the Bitcoin value because the bond buyers allegedly will be buying this bond in US dollars and they expect to receive US dollars back for the price of the bond. So that portion that's going to go into Bitcoin investments is a very risky proposition because the government is the one taking on all the pricing risk on whether Bitcoin goes up in price or goes down in price. Because even if Bitcoin goes down in price, they have to make the bondholders whole. So in that regard, there is significant concern about that. El Salvador itself, the Treasury, has invested, we think, over $100 million in Bitcoin itself. It's holding some Treasury deposits instead of in US dollars and cash and liquid currency. They invested in Bitcoin. At different intervals, they bought a bunch of Bitcoin. And when the Bitcoin price fell significantly, we think that they may have lost anywhere between $10 and $22 million in valuation of that Bitcoin. So that's an example of what can happen to those funds that they invest in Bitcoin from this bond.
So if the Bitcoin bond proceeds are not intended to cover payment of the bond coming due in January of next year, and El Salvador does not have an IMF agreement, is the government likely heading for a default on the 2023 bond?
That's the question that a lot of people in the markets are asking themselves, because there is significant pressure towards a non-payment of the 2023 bonds. That's where the IMF program was critical in providing sufficient funding for El Salvador to be able to meet all of its financing needs for 2022 and 2023. There is more pressure on the 2025 bond for El Salvador, but it is highly uncertain whether they're going to be able to meet this maturity in 2023. And so what they've proposed to do is that if the Bitcoin bond is successful, they expect to issue another Bitcoin-linked bond with the proceeds of that money actually going towards repaying the 2023 bond. But of course, there's massive amounts of uncertainty about that because this is indeed a very fluid market. It lacks a lot of transparency, and we don't know how deep the financing pool is. So we're closely watching, not just us, but everybody in the markets are closely watching what happens with this Bitcoin bond issuance.
Jaime, it's been fascinating. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And to read more about these research topics and to keep up to speed with our latest views across all emerging markets, you can visit our dedicated Emerging Markets Hub for the very latest research, podcasts, and interactive webinars at moodys.com/emerging markets. You can also subscribe to Moody's Talks, Emerging Markets Decoded, on your favorite podcast channels, including Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. And please do share your reviews, comments, and suggestions for future episodes. Until next time, stay safe, and thanks for joining us.